VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Palestinian medics said dozens of people were killed and wounded in an Israeli strike on a house in northern Gaza early on Sunday. It comes as hopes for a ceasefire deal between Hamas and Israel fade further after Qatar said it was stalling its mediation efforts until both sides show they are serious about ending the war. Reuters correspondent Diane Toe reports.
In video obtained by Reuters, a relative of the deceased says the building that was hit in Jabalia was sheltering dozens of his family members. They included children, all displaced by the war. The Israeli military said it struck a site in Jabalia in which terrorists were operating, adding that the details were under review. On Saturday, Qatar's foreign ministry said the country told Israel and Hamas 10 days ago, during the last try to reach a deal, it would stall its mediation efforts if nothing came of those talks. It said, quote, Qatar will resume those efforts with its partners when the parties show their willingness and seriousness to end the brutal war. The latest round of talks in October failed to produce an agreement, with Hamas rejecting a short-term ceasefire proposal. Israel has previously rejected some proposals for longer truces. Disagreements have centered on the long-term future of Hamas and Israel's presence in Gaza. Hamas wants an agreement that ends the war and a prisoner-for-hostages deal. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the war will only stop once Hamas is eradicated. Qatar, along with Egypt and the United States, have been working for months on fruitless talks between the warring sides in Gaza. Any disengagement from that process could further complicate efforts to reach a deal.
Reuters correspondent Diane Toe. This is VOA News. A source familiar with the conversation told Reuters on Sunday that U.S. President-elect Donald Trump spoke with Russian President Vladimir Putin and advised him not to escalate the Ukraine war, as President Joe Biden plans to urge Trump not to abandon Kyiv. The source said Trump and Putin spoke in recent days. Trump spoke with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Wednesday. Trump has criticized the scale of U.S. military and financial support for Kyiv, vowing to end the war quickly without saying how. The White House said Biden has invited Trump to come to the Oval Office on Wednesday. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said on Sunday that Biden's top message will be his commitment to ensure a peaceful transfer of power, and he will also talk to Trump about what's happening in Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. China has published baselines for a contested shoal in the South China Sea it had seized from the Philippines, a move that's likely to increase tensions over overlapping territorial claims. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
China's foreign ministry on Sunday posted online geographic coordinates for the baselines around Scarborough Shoal. A nation's territorial waters and exclusive economic zone are typically defined as the distance from the baselines. Both China and the Philippines claim Scarborough Shoal and other outcroppings in the South China Sea. A 2016 ruling by an international arbitration court found that most Chinese claims in the South China Sea were invalid, but Beijing refuses to abide by it. I'm Karen Chamas.
Ships from China and the Philippines have collided several times as part of increased confrontations, and the Chinese Coast Guard has blasted Philippine vessels with water cannons. A transitionary council created to reestablish democratic order in Haiti has signed a decree firing the country's interim prime minister, Gary Gonyi, replacing him with Alex Didi Felice-Ami, a businessman who was previously considered for the job. The decree, set to publish on Monday, was provided to the Associated Press by a government source. It marks even more turmoil in an already rocky democratic transition process for Haiti, which hasn't held democratic elections in years, in large part due to the soaring levels of gang violence plaguing the Caribbean nation. Gonyi, a longtime civil servant who has worked with the United Nations, served as prime minister for only 6 months. The Transitional Council was established in April, tasked with choosing Haiti's next prime minister and cabinet with the hope that it would help quell turmoil in Haiti. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, November 11th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Climate Change Conference, COP29, gets underway today in Baku, Azerbaijan, Monday.
The land that nourished us for a millennium is now being ravaged by increasingly severe heat, droughts, floods, and cyclones. The impacts are profound.
A delegation from the Parliament of ECOWAS is due in Liberia today, Monday, on a mediation mission. We'll hear the two views in the effort to impeach the Speaker of the House of Representatives. A civil society group in Nigeria calls a halt in giving cars and houses to judges. Results from Sunday's Mauritius parliamentary elections are expected today, Monday.
Everything went on smoothly. It was an interesting moment to observe a higher voter turnout as compared to that of the 2019 elections.
And Americans wonder how Trump will govern as the left reflects on last week's election loss. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's polls are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The global average temperature rise is approaching 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. This is according to the UN, which says this may be catastrophic unless action is taken as the UN climate change meeting COP29 gets underway today, Monday, in Baku, Azerbaijan. The World Health Organization, the WHO, encourages reducing fossil fuel use and asks countries to support adaptation strategies focused on people and resilience. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
The United Nations is calling for immediate action led by the G20 and top fossil fuel emitters to achieve the emissions cuts needed to limit global warming. As the UN Climate Conference begins today, Monday, in Baku, Azerbaijan, member states are focusing on scaling up climate finance. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says solving the climate crisis requires extraordinary international cooperation.
And once again, you are leading the call for ambition. You are demanding action now, not later. And I'm on your side. Leaders must arrive in Baku with ambitions that match the urgency and scale of the challenge. Together, let's push leaders to deliver.
The UN urges the world to embrace opportunities to tackle the climate crisis, limit global temperatures to 1.5 degrees Celsius, and support vulnerable communities in achieving net zero emissions by 2050. Selwyn Hart is an Assistant Secretary General of the Climate Action Team at the UN.
A good, credible, and ambitious outcome on finance is absolutely needed, especially the G20 that accounts for about 80% of global emissions, really to show the world and to show their populations and send the right signals to markets and to investors that they are truly committed to a 1.5-degree pathway.
African countries at COP29 are advocating for increased climate funding and the implementation of the Paris Agreement's carbon market rules by early next year. Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa had earlier said that Africa is experiencing the severe effects of climate change.
Our beloved continent, Africa, is enduring the worst effects of global warming. The land that nourished us for a millennium is now being ravaged by increasingly severe heat, droughts, floods, and cyclones. The impacts are profound, costing African economies between 3% and 5% of our GDPs.
At the same time, the World Health Organization, WHO, demands the urgent integration of health in climate negotiations ahead of COP29. Adelheid Onyango, the director of the Universal Health Coverage for WHO Africa, says the climate crisis is also a health crisis that must be addressed to save the future generations.
Health is the human face of climate change. The climate crisis threatens to undo the last 50 years of Africa's progress in development, health, and poverty reduction. We need urgent action to build resilience and reduce the vulnerability of our systems in order to safeguard the health and well-being of our people.
COP29 is looking forward to helping unlock the trillions of dollars that developing countries need to mitigate harmful carbon emissions, adapt to climate change, and cope with the loss and damage caused. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
Mauritians are today, Monday, expecting results from Sunday's parliamentary election, with Prime Minister Pravind Jugnauth seeking a second five-year term. His main challenger is Navin Ramgoolam of the Opposition Alliance for Change. Davina Merdan is a Mauritian independent political scientist based in Pretoria, South Africa. She tells me that voter turnout was higher than in 2009, but that a third consecutive term for Prime Minister Jugnauth might be a challenge, since this was the only election that he contested without his father.
I had to follow the elections on social media, the radio, and even from my parents and other relatives. Everything went on smoothly. It was an interesting moment to observe a higher voter turnout as compared to that of the 2019 elections, which was around 77%. This year, it was slightly higher, around 79%, with a lot more of young voters as opposed to 2019.
How popular do you think Prime Minister Jugnauth's government is, and what are the chances that the Prime Minister will be re-elected?
To be honest, it seems like he's not going to win a third term. His first term was in 2017 when his late father, Sir Anirudh Jagannath, passed the prime ministership to him in an almost seamless and democratic exercise. His second term was in 2019. A third term looks difficult, especially that this is the first election that he's contesting without his father, who many Mauritians consider as the one who transformed the Mauritian economy. Pravind Jagannath also had to deal with the COVID-19 crisis, the Wakashio scandal, high inflation, so many issues that speak so loud to the younger generations of the country. But I have to say that we have to wait until tomorrow morning to know for sure who will be the next prime minister. The 2019 elections also indicated that Pravind Jagannath and his other allies were not going to form the next government, but this is exactly what happened. The chances of him winning again are slim, but it is still early for a conclusion now.
Sometime last week, the government banned social media websites. Do you think this might have an impact on Sunday's voting?
The social media ban was provoked by leaked conversations between the Prime Minister himself and his ministers, even his private conversations with his wife, journalist conversations, and even ambassadors. Some of these conversations, which as of now we cannot be sure about whether they have been AI generated, are on corruptions happening, nepotism in state institutions, and even communal comments. This forced the government to ban social media, that is Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook. This social media ban negatively impacted most age groups. For children and teenagers who are currently writing exams, could not follow their online tutions on YouTube. Other young professionals who work on social media could not do so, especially for those having online business. Even for others, following online prayers were penalized. It was definitely an awakening moment whereby many Mauritians felt that their freedom of expression was being threatened. This could also explain why the young voter turnout was higher this year as opposed to 2019.
Davina Merdan is a Mauritian independent political scientist based in Pretoria, South Africa. Listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 11th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. A delegation from the Parliament of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, is due in Liberia today, Monday, on a mediation mission. This comes as one group in the Liberian House of Representatives, which claims to have the majority, is demanding the removal of Speaker J. Fonati Kofa. Speaker Kofa has refused to step down. Representative Fode Edward Fambule is a member of the Good Governance and Reform Committee and a member of the group calling for Speaker Kofa's removal. He tells me that Speaker Kofa is conflicted.
I complain then father four of our colleagues against the Speaker. The first issue in the complaint is that the Speaker is conflicted. It means he has conflict of interest. All friends that his party's honor represents the FPRC, the LCA, the National Port Authority, and it cannot be the speaker except for some legal positions. So the first count against him is that he's conflicted. The second count against the speaker is that the speaker overspent his budget when he was serving as deputy speaker. There was a time where $1.5 million was allotted in the speaker's budget, and the outturn of 2022 budget stated that the speaker spent over $5.4 million, in excess of over $3 to $4 million. That is a violation of the Nigerian budget law. The next issue is the issue of the Nigerian delegation to ECOWAS. The procedure has been, there has always been a resolution and an election being held for the parliament to recommend people who serve as representatives of the country to ECOWAS and other parliamentary bodies. The speaker unilaterally took a decision, and in his communication he said that the individual in question were elected, which is a misinformation to that body and the parliament attorney.
When you say you are going to proceed, exactly what are you going to do? The speaker still maintains that he is the speaker.
The first thing is that to exercise the power of the speaker position, you need to preside over the majority. And it is this majority that has the capacity to establish a quorum and conduct business in the absence of the speaker that has said they will not sit under his gavel. So the speaker has lost that confidence and he cannot preside. Moving forward, what we're going to do is to, one, go to session, two, ensure that the issue of the official complaint that was made against the speaker can be brought on the floor and plenary can take a decision, because we will need to invite him for due process. The speaker deserves due process. We need to investigate all of those things and plenary will take a decision.
From the beginning of this whole this issue, there were reports that people were paid or bribed to remove the speaker. How true is it?
I think it is false. The allegations are all propaganda, propagated by the side of the speaker.
Representative Fode Fambule is a member of the Good Governance and Reform Committee in the Liberian House of Representatives. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. An independent member of the Liberian House of Representatives says Speaker J. Fonati Kofa deserves a due process. This comes as one group of members, which claims to have the majority, is demanding the removal of the speaker for what they call conflict of interest. Speaker Kofa has refused to step down. Independent member Ellen Atowure tells me that removing the speaker must follow the Constitution and the rule of law.
According to our rules, Rule 48, we have a procedure. If there's a complaint filed against any member of the House, there should be a communication followed by an evidence that will be submitted to the Speaker. So in the case where it is about the Speaker, that complaint should be presented and the Speaker will have to recuse himself. And the next person who should be in charge is the Deputy Speaker that will preside over that subject matter. And in Rule 48, if you go to 48.5, it speaks to due process. If you also go to our Rule 9, it speaks to the number of persons that are required to remove a member, either by expulsion or to suspend. It also says two-thirds majority, which is 49 persons, are qualified to remove a person. In this case, it is not what we are seeing, and we think it is a violation of our rules and the Constitution.
Okay, so your issue is not about the allegations against the speaker, but you want a due process.
Yes, so it's a due process. Okay, because this is what it is. We are asking for the due process. We are asking to follow the rules, or else people may come together only because they don't want a particular person, a particular member, maybe due to some political reasons or personal differences. They can come together without having the required number, without giving you due process. And they say, we don't want you to be a member of the House and explore you without giving you due process to see why, what's the complaint, what's the allegation, where did you go wrong. So we don't want to open that Pandora box. This thing was tried in the 54th. and we stood our grounds. We followed the rules and the competition when they wanted to expel Honorable Yeka Koluba. So when we went through the procedure that if he's guilty of a crime, gave him due process to explain himself before we can take action according to our rules. And that's how they did not succeed. And Honorable Yeka Koluba took the house to the court at that time. So if people were able to abide by the rules and regulations and the laws, why is it now members of those that are wanting to break the laws and the rules are also members that were in the festival during that time?
Ellen Atowre is an independent member of the Liberian House of Representatives. She was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia, in Nigeria. The Socioeconomic Rights and Accountability Project, also known as SERRAP, has appealed to President Bola Tinubu to stop the Minister of the Federal Capital Territory, Nyesom Wike, and governors to stop giving cars and houses to judges. Minister Wike did not respond to our message for comment. Kola Wole Oluwudare is the deputy director of SERRAP. He tells me that such alleged practices violate the principle of separation of branches of the government and compromise the integrity and independence of the judiciary.
This latest advocate is to ensure that the judiciary in Nigeria is truly independent and free from political influence. And this is against the background of some recent events where the Minister of the ICT, Mr. Wike, confiscated some land from Judas Bank of PLC and allegedly gave it to the judiciary as a way, according to him, it needs to build houses for the judiciary. But this action is not in itself new. Governors across several states in Nigeria also do this. And this is a way to influence the judiciary, and that is why we've written to the president and the box stops at this table to direct Wike and other governors to stop this plan. Mr. Wike is a minister. It's very important at this time, in view of the nature of our democracy and recent events, that the president needs to step up and ensure that the principle of separation of powers is a reality and not just a constitutional framework in the book.
Let's back up a little bit. This allegation, can you prove that Mr. Wike is really involved in this?
It's public knowledge that Mr. Wike, it's a public function. He said it himself during the groundbreaking ceremony that he took the land from Judas Bank PLC, but that is not really the main issue, and that he intends to use it to build houses for members of the Court of Appeal and the Federal High Court judges in Abuja. It's public knowledge that he said that. And the Chief Justice of Nigeria was also at that event. So what we see is as usurping the powers of the National Judicial Council, we by the provisions of the Constitution, has the powers to also implement both the recurrent and capital expenditure of the judiciary. And this, of course, the reason is not perfect. It's to ensure the autonomy of the judiciary in line with the principle of separation of power.
If this allegation is true, what are you requesting the Tinubu government to do?
The president has the powers as the head of the executive to stop the case. Mr. Wike works for the president. He's the minister in his cabinet. He has the powers to direct him to stop these kind of actions. And he also has that power to protect the Constitution, which clearly provides for independence of the judiciary, to direct governors from doing the kind of things they did, which is buying houses and cars for the judiciary under the guise of catering to the welfare of the judiciary. The president has got powers. He has the mandate to protect the Constitution and to stop an infringement of the provisions of the Constitution. And that is what we expect the president to do. And if he does not do this, because we might be compelled to go to court to compel the president to obey the Constitution, and particularly to stop Mr. Wike and other governors from doing things that affects the integrity and the autonomy and the independence of the judiciary.
Kola Wole Oluwadare is the deputy director of the Socioeconomic Rights and Accountability Project of Nigeria. He was speaking with us from Abuja, Nigeria. Russia has opened the first ministerial conference of the Russia-Africa Partnership Forum in the city of Sochi, seeking to deepen ties with African nations and dispel a notion that it's isolated by Western sanctions. The Associated Press says the conference is billed as building on last summer's Russia-Africa summit, where Russian President Vladimir Putin quarter leaders from Africa and offer to expand political and business ties. Russian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova was quoted as saying by Russian state news agency RIA Novosti that the conference dashed hopes for Russia's isolation.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with rugby as South Africa men national rugby team, the Springboks, regained their number one spot in the world rugby rankings with a comprehensive 32-15 win over Scotland at Murrayfield on Sunday as they started their three-match tour on a positive note. But against England at Alliance Stadium next week, they will need to show more control than they showed at stages of the game with Scotland if they are to retain their number one spot. Although they turned it around later in the game, they gave away too many penalties in the first, and there was some very sloppy and poor line-out work earlier on. Springboks coach Rassie Erasmus believes building his squad depth ahead of their next Rugby World Cup is crucial if they want to defend their title.
We've noticed the whole week, you know, if you make 11 changes to a side, we say to the players, and we just expect them to immediately gel. It won't always happen like that. But that's certainly something we want to try and get into the team, no matter who you play with, that our systems and our communication and so on is up to scratch always.
And now to basketball, where Al Ahly Tripoli Sports Club beat Stade Malien 71-68 on Sunday in the final game of the 2025 road to the Basketball Africa League West Division Elite 16 in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. The Libyan champions became the first team to win a road to Basketball Africa League season undefeated. They opened the season on home soil with an 85-66 victory over Stade Malien and concluded it with another triumph over the Malian champions. Mohamed Hadi is a captain of the Al Ahly Tripoli Sports Club.
We make history in my country, and we go to the ball, and we're looking for the finals in the ball, inshallah.
In football news, Egyptian newcomers FC Masar produced a major upset in the CAF Women's Champions League debut, defeating title holders Mamelodi Sundowns 1-0 in a thrilling Group B clash in Casablanca on Sunday. A penalty in the first half stoppage time converted by Masar's forward Sadrine Niyonkuru sealed the victory and sent shockwaves through the tournament in Morocco. In a later game, a dominant display by Edo Queens saw the Nigerian outfit overcoming fellow debutant Commercial Bank of Ethiopia FC 3-0 at the Labi Zaoli Stadium in Casablanca on Sunday evening, brilliantly taking goals by MMSCN, Folashade Lijamlusi, and Chukwumaka Osiigwe were enough to secure a CAF Women's Champions League debut victory for the WAFU B champions against the Ethiopian side. MMSCN of Edo Queens was voted Woman of the Match.
I feel more happy, and this is what I was actually waiting for, and this is what I'm expecting. I'm expecting more of this. I'm really happy. I know my girls, and I believe in them. I believe in next game will bring out more of what you guys saw here.
And that does it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, November 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.
Presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source